Welcome to episode 125 of Conversation Street, the only podcast dedicated to the British soap institution Coronation Street. I'm Gemma.
And I'm Michael.
And this week we'll be discussing the episode's broadcast in the UK between the 1st and the 5th of December 2014.
And that's not all we'll be doing this week, because we're recording here in a car park in Manchester.
Live.
From
the place.
I don't know where we are. We have come...
We're in Castlefield.
Yes, we've come to do Christmas on the Cobbles.
Castlefield,
they call it up here. We're doing Christmas on the Cobbles.
Woo! Woo! How exciting.
And we're going to go and do a tour as well by New Manchester Walk. So there's going to be a guy called Ed Glynnut who's going to lead us and some other people around some famous Corrie locations.
Yep.
And yeah, it's going to be a good day, hopefully. We've just been reminded about how difficult it is driving around Manchester. Our sat-nav does not like it. We found a cheap car park anyway.
Cheapest in town, apparently.
So what we're going to do in this episode, hopefully, is do a couple of little on-location recordings. Not as much as we did last time we came back in April, but hopefully you should enjoy it. We'll get that done first. Then we'll go back and do our street talk and everything else at home, probably. We still haven't quite watched all of this week's episodes yet. We watched the first one yesterday. At about, what time was that? About 12:30 or something at night we started watching the first one.
Funnily enough, you started to fall asleep.
I did. I was drifting off, falling asleep halfway through that. So we haven't watched the second one, so don't spoil it for us. No, we're going to watch it later and then record after that. But we can at least do Corrie history. Corrie history while we're here. Go on.
Yeah, because it's been 50 years since the first appearance of Rita Littlewood.
Ah, Rita, happy anniversary.
Yeah.
Kind of. I mean, I think she was only in it for a little bit, and then she wasn't like a main character for a while. But it still counts.
Gosh.
Still counts. Happy anniversary, Rita.
45 years since the first appearance of Alan Howard.
Yes.
Slightly more significant, of course, than Rita.
That was one of Elsie Tanner's old fellas.
Mm. 30 years since the final appearance of Billy Walker, who sold the Rovers to Newton and Ridley.
Yeah, the end of the Walkers on Coronation Street was a bit of an era, wasn't it? Annie Walker had left it a couple of years beforehand, I think.
25 years since the police dug up the builder's yard where Alan Bradley had... He was suspected of killing Rita,
yeah.
But he didn't.
He didn't.
So you know, she was in Blackpool, which is where we should have gone, but we didn't.
I've never been to Blackpool. One of these days when we're taking a church up for Manchester, we'll have to go there, because that is a good Coronation Street location as well.
15 years since Norris started working at the cabin.
Now he's the owner.
Even though
we still all know it's Rita, really, who wears the trousers.
If I was... Norris, the first thing I've done upon owning the cabin is to change the name to the cabin with a C, because it always annoys me.
You'd have thought that Norris would be the sort of person that would be like a bit pedantic about things.
Yeah, because it is really silly that it's got a K. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, it makes it cool, doesn't it?
No, I hate it.
Makes it cool.
Absolutely hate it. And it bugs me every single time.
Off screen, it's also been 5 years since the death of Maggie Jones, who played Blanche Hunt. Sad loss to the world, because she was seemed to be everyone's favourite Coronation Street character, or at least high up there. It's been a different show without her, but...
It's lacking now she's gone, but, you know...
Well, we'll dedicate today's podcast episode just to you, Maggie.
Aww, she'll be thrilled. So, right. Before... We're going to leave you now, and when we pick up again, we will be doing a report about what we see today.
Yes, hope you enjoy it. See you later. Right, we've just come back from our Manchester Walks tour around, where were we? It was just kind of the area around the old Quay Street set, wasn't it? We didn't stray far, but there was lots of really interesting places that Ed, our tour guide, took us.
Yes, he was from New Manchester Walks, which does...
Lug!
Coach tours and cruises. And you can find them at newmanchesterwalks.com. And they do loads of other stuff as well. It's not just... Not just Corrie, I think. He only does one Corrie, one a year, I think, or...
Yeah.
He certainly didn't... It wasn't like a major sort of business thing that he does, but he also does... So, in January, he's got the Festive Canal Cruise with historical commentary on the 2nd of January. February, Hidden Manchester Pub Walk, sounds really cool. March, Manchester in footballers, in 11 footballers. The Hidden and Secret Corners of Castlefield on March the 13th. Yeah, so he does architecture, because he was talking about architecture as well when we went around.
Yeah.
And paintings, and pub walks and stuff. So definitely recommend you check him out if you want to go on a walking tour of Manchester, because he knows his stuff.
He does.
So first of all, we started off in a place I absolutely love, which is Russell and Bromley, which was featured heavily in Betty Driver's Funeral.
No, it was just...
Michael. I think you'll find that very clearly in the background.
That's where you started your walking tour.
I did.
Well, we met at St Anne's Church, which is just next to there. And that, as Gemma said, was where Betty Driver's funeral started. And there's a small tour group.
I want to start my funeral at Russell and Bromley.
No, you can have a funeral soon if you don't.
All right, Jimmy Choo.
So where do we go? I can't remember everywhere in order particularly, but it was a good mix of places that were either filming locations or places that were significant.
Anecdotal locations for Coronation Street. So he had quite a few, because he does his tours, so he knows the people that work on the set, and he's got sort of insider knowledge, and he's spoken to some of the cast and crew, and he said that he went to the New Media City set, which isn't in Media City.
Well, he told us it's not called that anymore. It's called Trafford Keys or something. I can't even remember what it's actually called. It's not Media City, apparently.
Well.
Yeah, so he talked about he met Jimmy Harkish in there, didn't he?
Yes, he did. And he told him that it's not as sociable there as it used to be when it was in this Castlefield set. What is this set?
The Key Street set.
So, because they used to just come out and go to in Manchester for drinks and stuff, but because it's so far out now, they don't really go anywhere together, and there's some people on the cast that he just never speaks to, including Emily. I can't believe they don't socialise.
You kind of, even though you know that there are some characters that have scenes more heavily with it than others, you think they kind of all do know each other and they get together and talk, but he said, like, there's some people that Jimmy never ever talked to or never saw, apart from maybe once a year at the staff Christmas do or whatever. It's quite funny. But yeah, so that was one of the cool little anecdotes. The first location we went to was, I can't remember what the building was called now, but it was where Madda and Sophie were sleeping rough earlier this year.
Oh, I've forgotten the name of it, but it was a very prestigious building that they were going to use as sort of the base for the North, Hitler invade during the war.
So he
told us also about how a year before they moved the set to where it is now, they started introducing seagull noises to acclimatise the viewers so that they wouldn't be confused when they heard seagulls on the new set, because obviously it's near the water. Now obviously we wouldn't notice that because we have seagulls all the time. So it's just normal.
Well, I thought they started putting in more tram noises like a year or so before the tram crash to kind of remind you that that's where
I think they did. And he also said something about the fact that they're going to build a new tramway near where the new set is, and I think that they're in a bit of denial about that because it's going to affect their filming, I think.
So they don't seem to want to think about that.
And he also was talking about how he met the guy who plays Tim.
Joe Dethern.
Yeah, he's talking about how some people are exactly the same as they are in real life, as their characters. And some notable people who aren't, for example, the guy who plays Tim, who's completely different in real life, and apparently he was in Life on Mars, which I started watching.
I've never seen any of that.
Oh, I think we should watch it, because it's quite good. Apparently he's got him in, like an evil gangster. Because I was watching That Mitchell and Webb, the show, and Tony is in that as a bit part player, and he's quite funny. And it's so funny seeing him, because it's like, oh, Tony, oh, funny.
We also went to see the building that John Stape jumped off.
Yes,
when he
tried
to kill himself.
And it's literally around the corner.
Yeah, that's really, really close. There's a few places that they filmed on just literally around the corner from the street. And that was also where some of the cast used to live as well. There was a block of flats nearby, and that was one of the only blocks of flats in the centre of Manchester back at the time in the 70s, and some of the old cast used to live there. And then he talked about how Brooke Vincent and Mikey North lived in these lived really nearby, because he saw her driving out once and then going straight underneath across the road to where she lived, because she would have got mobbed otherwise. She can't even walk home.
Oh, so sad. and also John Savidant lived in these another block of flats nearby, and he read a transcript from the 999 call that John Savidant made when he was stabbed.
I had forgotten about that, but when he started talking about it, I remember it. So that was...
I don't know anything about this, and it's quite a scandal. that I did not know anything about. So we had a bit of a dramatic
reenactment of that. John Savedon 999 call.
And what else did we learn? We also learned, we went to the pub where the name was chosen, Coronation Street, because as we know, it used to be called Florizel Street before it began.
Yeah.
And then they decided the cleaner told them, that sounds like a disinfectant, think of something else. They came up with Jubilee Street and Coronation Street. And Coronation Street won 1-2, as we found out.
Yeah, there was the three Harrys, I can't remember what their surnames were now, but they were in that pub voting, and two of them voted for Jubilee Street, and the one who took in the votes voted Coronation Street, and he said, oh yeah, Coronation Street won. And I think it sounds better.
Found out
I think
later.
Coronation Street has got like some kind of majesty with it, and Jubilee is a bit
Jubilee
frivolous.
Jubilee makes it sound like something's
party time and
gonna happen.
Everything's lighthearted
related
and lovely.
To Jubilee.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rather than it's just the name of the street.
I think they picked the right one. That's about it, isn't it, for the tour? Is it really good? And because we were a small tour group, we were able to sort of have some nice chats with him. But definitely worth going on if you see the Manchester Walks advertising another Corrie tour. Get on
in
it.
Get in there, and even if you don't, even if you can't get onto one of those tours, I'm sure if you pop along to any of the other tours that they run, you'll have a great time.
Yeah, he had some photos as well, didn't he, in a folder, so some of the bits he showed us, and there's like, this is what it used to look like, and there were some other stories that he told us, that were places we couldn't visit because it was too far away, but some interesting old pictures as well.
So it was about an hour and a half. I don't really know how far we walked, but it was... £7, which is good value.
Yeah. Oh, and we saw the pub that Liz Dawn used to own as well, didn't we?
Yeah.
All close
or
together.
Something. Was it
something like that.
Grapes of Wrath.
Maybe.
No.
Cool. Right, anyway, so we're just about to head off to the actual set now. Well, the old set. We're going to do the Christmas on the Cobbles tour. So we'll be reporting back live on the street, where we're hoping to get an interview with our tour guide. So we'll see you later.
Okay, so we're here on the street with David, our lovely tour guide. He's just taken us around backstage and to see all the sets. And obviously it's all decked out for Christmas because it's the special Corrie Christmas. So one thing we wanted to know is what special editions can visitors expect from the street?
Well, the special editions really are the decorations that have come actually from Media City. So they're the same decorations that were used on the programme, so they're now actually being seen. So when the people go into the Rovers, those decorations that they see on television, they're actually seeing them, you know, firsthand.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We've also got on some of the sets Christmas smells that are being like pumped in.
Yeah,
like
the chocolate orange.
Yeah,
really
it's lovely.
When you get to
when you get to the Duckworths, like I said on the sewer, though, I said, as long as they don't put any sprouts on, that's awful. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't fancy that.
Yeah, but also we've got the limited edition backstage passes for festive, but they're different, so they're a nice little keepsake.
Oh yeah, I noticed those. They're a bit different, aren't they? Yeah, yeah, they're very nice. And you've also got the snow effect.
Snow, yes, that's my all-time favourite, yeah, because the look on the people's faces as you open the door and they see the snow coming down.
It is actually really magical. It sounds cheesy, but it really is really nice when you sort of, and it wafts across, and it obviously it's cold as well, which helps the effect.
Yes.
So what's been the general reaction of the visitors so far for the Christmas?
So far, they're absolutely loving it. Like I say, when they come out of the Vistro, they look on their faces, and then they're walking down the street. We've got Christmas music playing. I mean, I think I've danced to Mariah Carey about half a dozen times over this week, because it's all on a loop.
Never too many times.
Never too many times, no.
Do you think there are many people that have been to the tour before you did the Christmas bit and then have come and seen the new parts for the Christmas?
Yes, well, a tour I did earlier on today. The two ladies said to me, oh, I like this bit. I said, oh, have you been before? They said, yeah, we came in August and you two was round then. I said, well, it's changed a little bit at the end now. And then when they came out, oh, it's snowing, that we love it. Yeah,
because we came back in, it was April, wasn't it?
Yes.
And we'd noticed it's different as we've gone round, so it's definitely worth coming back again.
And what other special events have you had during this year?
Well, during the year, a few weeks ago, with it being Halloween, we had a week of Halloween celebrations. All the houses were done up with pumpkins and skulls and all that. We did Trick or Street, where the kids were knocking on house doors, and the people were answering with masks on and all that.
That's really cool.
Yeah, they really enjoyed it. And we also did the Halloween walks during that week as well, where some of the tour guides did a separate tour script. Walking around, taking people around to, because there's been 7 murders around this little street, and they were taken around to each and every area where people have have met an untimely end.
I like a good murder on the street, don't I?
Yeah. Didn't Brian Capron come in for that?
He did. Mm. Yeah, on Halloween itself, they did the what they call a Halloween walk. And they took everybody into the Platt's back garden, and especially after dark, then, because he arrived, I think, about 4:30 in the afternoon, so it had gone dark by then. And the rice at the end of it, he opened the patio doors, and there he was with his crowbar. Yeah. Everybody's like, oh, no.
So have you got a chance to meet many of the other actors or ex-cast?
Yes, it's mostly ex-cast who've come along. Reg and Maureen Holdsworth, Chevy Houston, and also Ken Morley.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, Reg Holdsworth.
Yeah, Ken Morley came in to see us in October. All the people during the in July we had what was called Curly Thursdays.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Kevin Kennedy, when he played Curly Watts, he came in the Thursday afternoons during all July. which drew people in, and he did meets and greets and all that. He actually sat in on the duck with Seth, and as tours arrived, he was like, everybody's like, oh, it's Curly.
Oh,
really,
I must have loved that. Because he's really obviously one of these people that's really, really into the being in the street. Because a lot of them are kind of like, it's my job, I'm just an actor. But he seemed to like really genuinely love the street.
Yeah, he did.
Where's the furthest that someone's travelled to be on the tour from?
It is New Zealand.
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't think you can get much further than that, really.
No, because you mentioned as we were going around the tour that they're how far behind?
2 years behind.
2 years, yeah. So the Hayley's Coffin.
Yeah, a couple of spoilers there.
It is a couple as well. Yeah. We always like, some tour guides ask at the beginning of the tour, I leave it until we actually get to the birth, marriages and death area of the tour, the life cycle, as I call it. I'd just like to ask before I mention anything about that second coffin to the people who have people from New Zealand. And if somebody says, I say, do you know who that coffin is? And if they say no, I say, right, well,
come over here.
This is a little bit of a spoiler, unfortunately.
Oh.
And we have had some ladies over the summer who've been in tears.
Oh, yeah. It must be quite shocking.
I know. Such a character, a big character as Hayley.
Yeah. Because in New Zealand, like she was over here, Hayley is a really well-loved character.
Yeah. I remember when we first found out that she was going to leave the show, we were like, how are they going to... They can't kill her off, surely. And then
it's the only way that they could get rid of her. Yeah. She couldn't have had her leave Roy.
Yeah, we were saying, oh, she can't leave Roy, because she went to Africa, didn't she? And we were like, maybe she'll go back to Africa, but that was kind of silly when she went the first time.
So have you got any other good stories just to finish off from this year?
Well, each and every one of us have had an absolute ball since we started. We started in April. We opened on the 5th of April. We actually started in the middle of March and did some training. We went down to Media City and we saw the new set down there and the studios, which was absolutely brilliant.
Incredible.
We've all got on really, really, really well, and we're all working together as a team. We all pulled together. If we have some hairy mumps in the studio where we have to adapt to, as we all just literally help each other. It's been a fantastic time. And the look on people's faces when they walk onto Coronation Street, because until we opened, nobody from the public was allowed to walk on Coronation Street for about 14 years since the closure of the old Granada Studios tour.
Yeah.
So it's a chance, sort of unmissable chance, really, isn't it? Because it's not going to be around forever.
No.
This set, it's going to be knocked down, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, completely redeveloped. We are opening to 2015 now. So whoever's listening to this, please get onto Ticketmaster, book some tickets, come and see us, because as you just said, it's not going to be around forever.
It's really worth coming.
It definitely is. So thank you very much for your time, David. It's been a great tour.
Very, very welcome indeed.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you. So that was David, our tour guide, lovely tour guide, who he told us after we finished interviewing that he's actually runs in the family, doesn't it? Doing the tours, because his father, who sadly passed away last year, used to do the Granada tours, and he used to play the piano.
Which is amazing.
So he's doing it in honour of his dad, which is a really nice touch. Yeah. And you could tell he loved the show.
Oh yeah, he's a really nice guy, and he had lots of good stories and everything. Yes. We had a bit of a chat with him after the interview as well. Yeah. We had a coffee with him, so he's a great chap.
Lovely guy.
Yeah, we spoke to a couple of the other tour guides as well. There was a guy who'd just started there.
That was his
first day on the tour.
He said he sounded more suited to EastEnders,
Home and Away,
and Neighbours. But no, he was a Coronation Street tour guide.
And who's the other one? Andrew?
The Coracle,
he's called. Yes. So he's very knowledgeable about Coronation Street, apparently. But what did you think of the tour?
I thought it was good.
I thought it was really good.
As David has just informed you, all of the decorations are from the sets.
Yeah, so, the actual ones that they've been using this Christmas.
Yeah, so it was a nice touch to see everything there, and... the Christmas, the bit where you come out of, because if you've been on the tour before, you'll know that you go around all the sets, the indoor sets, and you come out through the doors of Nick's bistro, Just Nick's now, of course. And as the doors open, they play the Coronation Street theme, and they also shoot snow. And it really sounds cool so cheesy, but it's like, oh, it's so magical.
I wasn't
magical.
Expecting it. I think I'd read about it and forgotten about it. But yeah, when the doors opened and there was this fake snow coming down, it's like, oh, it's so magical.
Oh, it's Christmas.
So as we were standing there doing the interview, and then a bit afterwards, we were seeing more people coming out onto the street with this foamy snow coming down. And yeah, it was lovely.
It was worth coming. I mean, even though we had to come all the way from Southampton, and we've already
go
seen
back
it,
there tonight.
We definitely enjoyed the fact that was a new addition, and it was really, really nice.
Yeah, there was enough new stuff there. I mean, obviously that they couldn't change the whole set, so it was still the same sets as before. Carla's flat and the
but they are
going to
change them
everything.
Next year.
Well, they apparently they're going to do a few changes next year, but they were all Christmasified with tinsel and. Cards up, well, apart from Carla's.
Carla's had like one present that she was wrapping.
Halfway through wrapping, and then decided to drop her for a glass of wine, I think. And what else was there?
Well, just Christmas lights everywhere and snow on the roof. And
yeah, oh, and the video that they showed us before we went into the old sets as well.
That was worth seeing.
Yeah, because that was different. I mean, they had a fantastic video before you go into the sets before that was just like all the classic moments from Corrie's history. And this was just a selection of Christmas moments as well. So there were some memorable ones. The punch-ups, Jack punching Terry. Of course, there was Teresa the turkey getting went over as well. And there were some like touching ones as well. There was Hilda Ogden's last episode. There was Curly naming the star after Raquel and things like that. So that was all really nice. And I one thing I really liked about the tour, and it was nothing about the tour itself, but some of the guests, I liked how there were some younger children on there that were really getting excited about Coronation Street, because lots of people say, oh, Coronation Street, that's for old people and kids these days don't like that. But there were some kids, how old do I reckon? 7, 8, 9 year olds maybe.
Kids, yeah.
And they were really, really excited about seeing the different sets. And there was that, as we were walking down the corridors, and there were some old pictures of like, and they're going, oh, is that Ken Barlow? Wow. And there's one of Emily in a bikini. What was it? Like a swimsuit, wasn't it? On one of the location episodes. And I couldn't believe that this was Emily. So it was really nice to see that Corrie still lives on in the younger generation.
And there was one baby that really didn't like any of it.
Yeah, well.
I think that was
an EastEnders fan.
Yeah, probably. so that was the tour.
Yeah, definitely worth going back to. The snow on the roof was lovely. I mean, the snow spraying was just over the bistro, wasn't it?
And it only was every sort of 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. But worth doing because there were lights all over it. And
you'll get some lovely pictures.
Yeah, we've got some pictures that we'll put on the internet as well, probably before this episode gets put on.
And we also met someone else that we met, Nick.
Oh, yeah.
Nick Dutton, who is an actor.
He was just in our tour group with us. Yeah, he overheard us talking about the podcast.
He came over to say hello. And
hello. So hello
and
back if you're listening.
He told us that he's got a blog called The Corrie Campaign. blogspot.co.uk, who's been campaigning to get himself on Coronation Street. A worthy cause indeed, I think.
Yeah.
So we might have a chat with him in a later podcast.
Yeah, we'll see if we can arrange an interview or something.
So that was nice. You always meet really interesting and enthusiastic people doing Corrie stuff, I find.
Yeah, that's because Corrie fans are the best fans. Right, I think we need to get back home.
Do you think so?
Yes. Well, we're going to be stopping back off at Coventry to have some dinner with Mum and Dad, and then back to Southampton again quite late tonight. And who knows when we're going to be recording the rest of this podcast, because
The plan went wrong, didn't it?
Yeah, we were going to do some recording in the car, and then the sound quality wasn't very good, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. It might be a short one, but hopefully you've all enjoyed our second Coronation Street episode of the year. Our Coronation Street tour episode of the year, should I say. It's been great doing it. And if you haven't been so far, get up here and have a go around.
Travel here.
Travel to this place.
Exactly.
We're back home now. It's what a weekend. It's Sunday now. It's Sunday night. So we've been back down south for 24 hours now, but we've been on the Isle of Wight all day today. So
we saw the Queen.
No, we didn't.
Yes, we did.
We saw where the Queen used to live.
No, we saw the Queen
Victoria.
Where
Queen Victoria used to live.
No,
there was
we
a
saw
lady
Queen
dressed
Queen
up
Victoria.
As Queen Victoria.
No,
yeah.
I think you'll find she was actually Queen Victoria.
She did play the part very well.
She didn't even know what television was, so explain that then.
We know what television was.
Because we watched it.
We watched it. Now I'm going to talk about it. Coronation Street is street talk for the week. And I think this is probably all we're going to do today because we're tired. And we've got news, but there's not very much. And there's some lovely feedback, but we'll save it for next week
because it's exciting.
What storylines have we got to talk about this week then?
This week, we had quite a good week. You said it was quite good, you thought.
Well, it ended better than it started, okay. I think.
Well, we had Battle of the Bitch.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Which was a face-off between Tracy and Carla, which apparently was highly...
Publicised,
but was a bit of a damp squib.
I thought so.
Actuality.
We thought so.
Well, I thought so, because you hyped it up to me, and it was not a fight. Because if I was in a fight like that, I would be disappointed. I want more scrapping and blood.
It was just a bit of a tussle, wasn't it?
It wasn't even a tussle.
A shove.
Yes. Kevin, next we've got Callie, Seven, and Sofa. No, Sally, Kevin, and Sofa Webster.
Sofa Webster.
Yes, we get it.
That was a storyline to me that started off ridiculously.
Poorly.
It was awful. Awful bit of slapstick, I think, on a Wednesday's episode. But Friday's really good payoff.
So what happened this week was we had Monday was one half an hour. Wednesday was a whole hour.
Yeah.
And then Friday was two episodes, yeah, which were half an hour each. But the Wednesday episode felt very much like a half hour that was padded with loads of really awkward extended scenes and lines that you think, no, you should have cut that.
Most
that
of which terrible. Came from this Sofa Webster storyline.
And most of it was most of the extra stuff seemed to be tacked onto the end of scenes where they were like, how do we double the length of this scene? I know, well, it's just an awkward joke at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant.
There was a lot of that in this storyline. And we've got a new storyline for Sean. And yeah, that's right. Sean has got his own storyline.
Bless him.
Calling it that, though.
No, I know.
Sean gets revved up, we're going to call it. Because he's going out with a reverend. What's going to happen there?
Is he, or did he just meet one?
He did meet one, but I think they're probably
got to wait for the gay marriage a bit longer.
Yes.
And then we've got Alio and Gary.
We still hate them so much that we don't want to mention it enough.
And also, we've got the final storyline was Katie giving up on being a paramedic. And I'm just going to summarise the entire storyline for you. She applied for A-levels on Monday. On Wednesday, she felt sick when somebody had a horrible accident in the gym. Everybody mocked her, and she gave up.
Brilliant.
That's the entire story arc.
You can tell that she's one of the Armstrongs. Well, yes, we tell she's related to Izzy.
Izzy was like, oh, no, I'm not doing it anymore.
Give up. Oh, yeah, so no paramedicking for Katie.
Possibly.
Oh, well.
Oh, well, what a dream that was dashed. We all had such high hopes for her. I knew she could do it, but I didn't realise she was squeamish.
No.
Apparently she thought she'd just get over it. Now, you know I'm squeamish.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have never even considered becoming a paramedic because I know that it involves
lots of copious amounts of blood
and
stuff.
And being able to keep one's head.
But yeah. Never mind, Katie. Maybe you'll be able to do something interesting another week. Right.
Right, let's start.
Let's do our
stuff. Who, of course, are Carla and Tracy, the two head bitches of the street, having a face-off, which I thought culminated in a highly disappointing, spoiler alert, truce. I was so excited about Tracy taking revenge from Carla over the course of several weeks, perhaps climaxing in some kind of horrific Christmas Day stunt.
It still kind of could, because maybe now that maybe as Carla let her guard down or something, and Tracy could use that to her advantage.
Tracy did give her a look at the end of the week that made me think perhaps she's not quite
yet
buried the hatchet. Anyway, let's get on with it. So Tracy's struggling because she's got all these bills to pay. She's got the rent due, and she's not doing well in the shop. She's got to pay off all the stuff from the wedding, which is hanging over her head, which Michelle is moaning at her about because she's got to pay off the suppliers. So Tony is trying to help her by offering her some Xboxes, but she doesn't want anything to do with him because she kind of blames him for everything that happened, along with Carla, because she knows that she was involved in this dodgy dealings, and that's when everything...
It's basically everybody's fault.
Everyone's fault but hers and Rob's. And also, Tracy gets irritated when she finds out that Carla's giving everyone a Christmas bonus. And Tony's telling Liz that he's got a plot to take over Tracy's business at some point.
Yeah, what do you think about that, having Tony in charge? Because didn't he say all this time next year
it's
going to be mine?
Well, no, I think he's going to try, but I don't think Tracy's going to roll over and let him take it.
No, I hope not. I don't like the idea of Tony being in charge of that shop.
Well, it kind of gives him a bit more permanence, doesn't it? And I'm not really quite happy with him being...
No, a permanent character.
I kind of think of him as a guest star. He just won't bugger off.
Yeah, It's nice to have Tracy kind of with a stable job, and I know she's not... I suppose realistically she wouldn't find it very easy to keep this business open on her own.
No.
But I don't like the idea of Tony
going
in there.
Well, she was quite into it to start with, and she didn't need Rob's help. He kind of held her hand a bit, but she didn't need it, I don't think.
Well.
But anyway.
I guess with everything sorted between her and Carla, allegedly, and Michelle at the end of the week, then there's more chance that she can keep it going, all right.
But at the beginning of the week, as we know, she's still blaming Carla for everything, and she tells Ken Carla's trying to ruin her life. And she also gets really mad because Tracy, Carla and Michelle go to a spa on the Wednesday. It wasn't quite all it was cracked up to be, because they had a hunky masseur, I've forgotten his name, and another one called Phil, which Carla was supposed to have, and it turned out that Phil is short for Philomena.
Didn't you guess that before big reveal came?
And she was actually really funny. I thought she was great.
Yeah, nice.
And I would also prefer
guest slot. She was good.
A female masseuse anyway, because I find it very cringy. I don't understand. Why would you want some... You can't even see their face anyway, for a start.
Oh, I guess maybe you can like fantasise about it.
Surely, if you're going to go for a masseur who's going to turn you on, it should be someone with a good voice rather than anything else. You know? Because you're not going to hear that. Good voice, warm hands.
Yeah.
Just like you, my dear.
Oh, thank you. so they go through that. And then meanwhile, though, Tracy is up to no good at the factory. Because Gary and Alia were there at the factory late at night.
They were
and
having
then
shenanigans.
Yes.
Tracy gets the keys from Rob's old jacket because Ken was found them in a jacket that was donated to the charity shop.
Yes.
And Emily passes them back. She goes off to the factory to trash everything. Meanwhile, Tracy also, by the way, turned down Beth for being her bridesmaid, maid of honour thing.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't very nice, was it?
So she's obviously annoyed. So she goes and starts trashing everything.
Do you think, was she meant to be found and caught or anything? Or did she... Cause she didn't,
what do you mean?
Tracy, did she want Carla to...
She didn't have a plan. She was just furious. So she
just taken out her,
yes,
her frustrations. That, I think that was more exciting than the fight.
Of course it was.
Throwing the chair through the window and everything.
Yeah, so she was causing merry hell. Carla comes back, all happy from the spa, and then Ken sees her, she's in a good mood and does what only Ken can do and says, oh, by the way, Rob, what is it, Rob's...
Rob's hearing's fixed
Rob's
for
hearing's
next week.
Fixed.
Which I didn't even know he was deaf, so...
Well, it's a good job that it's being sorted, is what I can say. So she feels really down, and she goes to the factory for some alone time. And she goes in through the door, and Tracy emerges from the shadows. So they had a really great build-up to this. They had sort of it could have been an epic, memorable fight scene.
Well, I said to you yesterday, didn't I, that I wanted it to be something that spilled out onto the street, because they made a big thing of the factory set now being built inside the factory on the new street. So they could have started off there and just, like, in one continuous shot, like, tumbled out onto the street.
Yeah,
and that would have been quite cool. But as it turned out, they just had a bit of a push and a shove, and then it gets shoved onto a box.
Tracy. Oh.
I think...
Yeah, Tracy does.
Carla won, basically.
Well, they start shouting at each other, basically. And she, Carla pushes Tracy over and says, I'm going to call the police. And Tracy's like, oh, I loved Rob. I don't care what he did. I've got nothing now. And Carla's like, well, you've got Amy, which is quite a poignant thing for Carla to point out. They didn't have to go spell out and say, you know, she lost her own baby. But it kind of reminds you that Carla lost out quite a lot.
Everyone has lost
situation.
So they just have a nice little truce, don't they?
Well, they go back to the pub, and Carla says, nothing's happened, everything's going to be behind us now, and Tracy's like, So I forgot to say, when they were at the spa, all the time, Michelle, all she would talk about is harping on about these bloody suppliers, wedding suppliers, and how they're going to ruin her business because she owes them all the money that Tracy didn't give her for the wedding.
Well,
Number one, where was this money going to come from in the first place? Because it had to have been somewhere, because they got married. They were there on the day. Where was the money then?
Who knows?
You can't get married and pay them back later.
Second point,
why didn't Michelle have any insurance? Because if I was planning Tracy Barlow's wedding, I would have taken out a lot of insurance and I would have got a hefty payday for it as well. Number three, why was Michelle paying for everything? Why was it in her name? That makes no sense.
None of it makes any sense.
And
it's
then
just all
contrived. Another point, the fourth point is, Michelle tells Carla she didn't take any commission. What was she doing it for then?
Is that the goodness of her heart? Because Michelle's so lovely, isn't she?
Well, anyway.
She almost got my hopes up this week as well, because she was like, oh, maybe I just need a fresh start away from Weatherfield and something.
Yeah,
I was like, yes,
Carla
please.
Talks her out of it.
Yeah,
and because she's saying, oh, my business is ruined, so I might as well give up now. And she just basically spends the whole day trying to ruin Carla's spa.
Yeah.
So on Friday, Carla gives her a cheque for the remaining balance of the wedding. And Michelle's like, oh, I can't take
just
this.
Shut her up.
And Carla says, actually, you can. Shut up. You're just bringing me down. And Carla says, look, it's actually going to annoy Tracy, so take it anyway.
Mm.
So Michelle goes to Tracy and tells her. First of all, she kind of leaves her squirming a bit. Cause she's like, oh, you owe me the vig. Making out that she needs the money right away and she's got to pay up and stuff. And then eventually she says, oh, luckily for you, somebody's bailed you out. And she tells her it's Carla. So Tracy goes to see Carla and Carla acts really nervous and cagey about it. But Tracy just says, thank you. Which is quite a turn of events for her to just peacefully, quietly say thank you for doing a good deed for me. And Carla says, oh, I did it really to ease my guilt, but I wonder where it's going to go between those two, because it does seem like it's concluded.
We didn't write anything down for the second half of that episode, and that was still Tracy. What was that Great Gatsby thing that Ken was reading that, and Tracy, wasn't she going through a balance in her...
She's trying to do her VAT returns.
Yeah, so she's still having some kind of money issues.
Well, it's not solved the problems with her business.
No, she's still kind of on her own with it, so maybe just because of this, she's going to invite Tony to come and help her, and then he's going to... try and take
who
over
would she
that
be
way.
Better off with? Tony being a business partner or Todd? A pair of sharks. I'll just sell it to the pair of them and watch them destroy each other.
Okay, so this...
And it's the sofa.
The sofa storyline.
Sofa Webster.
Right,
on Wednesday...
Jack
begin,
has drawn over Kevin's sofa, basically.
Yes, so...
Carla's got this. Got a client at the factory, and Sally ends up having to show him round, doesn't she? Because Carla's off doing her spa. So this guy overhears Kevin saying that he's in sofa problems, and then says, "You can have my sofa." And Kevin sort of bites his hand off, basically. And it's giant and lip shaped,
and red,
and red. It's
and also
hideous.
At a 90-degree angle.
And also really uncomfortable looking.
That's what I meant.
The most uncomfortable looking sofa ever. I don't like leather sofas anyway, but this one was just...
They should all get a soap award for trying to make it look comfortable, because they have been trying really hard to drape themselves on it.
I know.
And
all
lounge.
All the shots of them on it, it's just like, that looks so uncomfortable.
So uncomfortable. Anyway...
So the comedy scene of Wednesday's episode was Kevin and Owen, was it, trying to get this sofa in through the door of number 13?
But it won't fit.
It's like they wanted it to look like some kind of Chuckle Brothers homage, didn't they? But
mentioned them before for some reason.
Yeah. I can't
anyway,
remember why. But
so,
it was just awful. It was drawn
a terrible
out.
Scene. Yes, it was just like your description of it. So Tim comes along and says, if you don't want that, I'll have it, because Sally would love it. And she's also saying, I always need to be more decisive. So this is me making a decision. Let's swap sofas. So,
well, Kevin's happy anyway, because the sofa that Sally's got used to be his anyway. So
yes.
He just gets the old sofa back.
So Tim tells Sally, I've got a surprise for you. Brings her back. And she describes the sofa as Mick Jagger blowing a flipping raspberry. And then she says, how could you inflict this on me, and demands the sofa back. Kevin refuses to swap back, and Sally blows the top, tells Tim to get rid of it, and also refuses to give him a reading lesson because she's really cross. But
Didn't she write him a little note saying, like, stick it up or something like that?
Yeah.
Read this. Oh, that was quite funny.
So Sally starts to thaw, because Ali's there. I can't remember how it comes up in conversation, but it turns out it came from Hale Barnes. And
is that a real thing, or is that something for Coronation Street?
And it costs £2,000, and it's part of the Manhattan Rage from LeCour.
Mm.
Wow.
I just like how this storyline turned into another outlet for Sally to be another snob for the week, and that's when it started turning around.
That's where she really thrives.
Exactly.
So on Friday, she has decided that this sofa is her thing now. She's perfectly happy. She won't let Tim eat cereal on it. Tim's happy because Sally is in the mood for a romance. And he gives Kevin some beer, which I think was probably tainted when Kevin drank it, with the sour knowledge of
what Sally and Tim were getting up to.
Celebrations
on the sofa.
Now, A controversial figure arrives on the street on Friday. It is an American.
Yeah.
Now, we know we have listeners who are from those parts. So I wonder what their reaction is to this character.
So this was an American actress that's based in the UK, and she, looking at her IMDb stuff, she hasn't been in a whole lot of things, but she was on an episode of Sopranos, and she's also done a bit of Hollyoaks over here as well, and Doctors, yes. I think. But she did stand out like a sore thumb.
Her name's Diane, and I did feel a bit like I was watching Desperate Housewives or something.
Yeah, it's because her whole thing was that she was like from the posh part of Manchester, I think. So she's like a rival for Sally.
She wasn't a rival. She was Sally's wet dream.
But and also a new romantic interest for Kevin, possibly, as well. Because he's not been doing anything.
I think, I don't know. I don't know what it is. She kind of, I feel like maybe she's got a different style of acting because she's been in American dramas or something.
Yeah, it didn't seem quite right to me.
And also, all the way through, I was thinking, why would she be there? Why would she be hanging around with these people?
She's obviously the character.
Yeah, she's rich, posh, and she comes there looking, hanging out with a mechanic, and everyone said, oh, she's so down to earth and lovely. But why would she be there?
Well, she was the ex-wife of this guy who got the sofa off, wasn't she?
Of course.
I
understand the premise of why she was there, Michael. I'm just saying, in reality, she wouldn't say, oh, because she comes to look for her sofa,
yeah.
Right? She wouldn't go, I've come looking for my sofa, but instead I found friends and a local pub that's so quaint.
So quaint in English.
The thing is, Manchester's full of pubs like that. Why would she go there?
Who knows?
Anyway.
I did quite enjoy watching her, to be honest. She drew my attention.
I felt a bit like I was picking a scab. It's kind of pleasurable, but wrong.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I kind of felt a bit like it's kind of like a scratching an itch a bit too long. Anyway, she is there because her husband got rid of it despite her. They're getting a divorce, and Kevin decides to lie to her about it because he's embarrassed, I think, and also he wants to stall her for time. He tells her he sold it to someone in the pub.
Yeah, it's because he doesn't want her to know that Sally's got it, because he doesn't want to have to tell Sally, sorry, you can't have that sofa anymore. So he says, like, oh, my mate's got it.
I think that's the reason, because he does tell her that, he does tell Tim to get it back off her.
Oh, I can't remember.
So anyway, they go in to have a drink in the pub, and she says, oh, you're so rugged. Jason comes along and starts trying to land Kevin in it by saying, oh, you just sold it to Tim. But Kevin manages to shut him up before he does any damage. So Kevin goes and asks Sally back for the sofa back. See, I told you he wasn't worried about asking her, but she refuses.
Okay.
And then Kevin goes behind her back and tells Tim, I need the sofa back. I need to give it to Diane. And Tim goes, what, do you fancy her? And he's like, no, yeah, all right then. And Tim says, no, still, I'm not giving it back.
Well, the big cliffhanger at the end of that first Friday episode was that, what am I going to do? She's going to rumble me. It's like,
I don't really care.
Don't really care. But they all go to the bistro in the second half of the episode. And meanwhile, Sally is there watching, back at home, watching Faye and Craig on the sofa like a hawk. She's worried that they're going to spill things on it. Kevin basically tells Diane his life story. And what was he saying about how that he's going through he went through a divorce as well and everything like
and
that.
And blah, blah, blah.
And blah, blah, blah. And I've got a son called Jack and he's at four and everything. So then, yeah, Sally and Tim then walk in. And Sally is completely snobbing it up. And they end up inviting themselves basically to sit down with them. And Sally just spends the whole conversation trying to snipe at Kevin and sort of badmouth him and make him.
I hope you mentioned the fact that she was talking about, because Diane says that her husband left her for a younger woman. And then Sally goes, How old was Molly?
It's very funny.
Anyway, so the sofa keeps almost coming up in conversation, and Kevin keeps desperately trying to change the subject.
Yeah, what was it? Was Tim about to say something, or Sally was, and then Kevin like had to jab Tim to try and divert attention and everything. It's all very funny. And then Diane went off to the loo, and then they have to explain
to
Sally.
She went to the little girl's room.
And then they have to explain to Sally what's going on. So Sally then has to fake a migraine. She invited her back home, didn't she? She's like, oh, come and see my house. I've got a conservatory and everything.
Yes. Well, she has to.
She has to call it off because of this.
She says she's getting a migraine. And then she sees Sean when she's outside. Sean walks along and he's like, why didn't you come out with me, Sally? And she's like, oh, I changed my mind. Here's my friend. She's from Hell Barnes. And then she says to Dan, oh, that's someone I work with. He's gay. I don't know why she didn't say, and so's my daughter. And oh, yeah, my other daughter's a model.
So Sally is realising at the end of the episode she has to choose between possibly being friends with Diane. She hasn't got any high-flying friends, has she? This could be her route upwards, exactly, or getting rid of her sofa.
So I don't know how she thinks she could possibly get it to Diane without it looking incredibly suspicious. I imagine there's going to be a comedy storyline next week where she tries to pretend she just so happens to have the same sofa by chance. Anyway, Diane.
Yeah, she ends up having a bit of a nightcap with Kevin and gets a kiss from him.
She kisses him on the lips, which is a bit weird, to be honest.
I just don't think they're particularly well suited, Kevin and Diane. But I mean, I guess, well, are we going to see more of her? I assume so. But I don't think it's going to be particularly long-lasting. She just seems like guest actress of the week, doesn't she?
It kind of felt like she was a famous actress, but she's not famous.
Well, yeah, when I wanted to look her up on the internet, it's like, oh, who's this that they've got for a week or something? But it isn't a massive name, is it? But
it's very strange. It's very strange hearing an American accent on the show.
It was really weird, yeah.
But it's weird because you don't really care when you're watching an American thing and there's an English person on it, apart from to say, oh, I guess the villains turned up.
Yeah, exactly. I quite enjoyed that storyline in the end. The sofa at the beginning was a bit rubbish, but it just because it was another outlet for Sally's snobbery on Friday that turned it around.
Also, I thought the character of Diane was kind of like sickeningly nice almost. Like she was just simpering and smiling and being sympathetic and indulging all these characters, their crazy personalities. She kind of had, apart from being very nice, she's slightly bland as well. And what I would like to happen is for her to get embroiled in a series of absolutely ridiculous escapades and eventually just run away screaming, you guys are all crazy.
Come back to America.
Yeah. That would be a good way of wrapping it up.
Yes. In the meantime, we've got Sean. We just mentioned he was coming back from clubbing on Friday night because he's decided to get back in the dating game.
Yeah, he's lonely at Christmas. He goes out with Todd and Jason on Wednesday, but nothing really happens.
Yeah, they get chucked out the bar because Jason gets flirted.
So he decides to organise a night out for the factory workers on a Friday, and everybody says they're going. Until the last minute when they all drop out, apart from Sinead.
What is Sean's problem with Sinead?
Doesn't want to go out with Sinead because she's a bit of a square, I think he thinks. And he even criticises her outfit, but to be honest, I couldn't see what was wrong with it.
Well, she was very un-Sinead looking on Friday night, wasn't she? She was Katie McGlynn again on Friday.
Kind of shift dress, kind of floral patterned outfit with this giant statement necklace, which is really in at the moment.
She wasn't buttoned up to the neck like she usually is.
No, and she was doing a little kind of like swimming dancing.
But her dancing was absolutely hilarious. And they made her
funny expressions all the way through too.
Yeah, yeah. And they made a big thing about the fact that Sinead doesn't drink and everything, and she doesn't need it because she's just so crazy as it is. But she reminded me of like Luna Lovegood again.
Yeah.
Just kooky and weird. And Sean was just a bit embarrassed being with her, but she was having the time of her life. And
I wonder whether Alia and Sinead will bond over the fact that neither of them drink.
There's definitely the possibility that could happen, isn't there? But anyway, Sean catches the eye of some hunky guy there.
Billy, oh, Billy.
Mm.
And, sexy man he is, but
he's
wait.
He's just moved to the parish.
The parish? Mm. Why would you describe an area as a parish?
He's only a vicar.
He's a vicar? They let gay vicars in these days?
Well, yeah, they tried to get it out of the way fairly quickly, didn't they, by saying, good. Oh, it's accepted, but it's not particularly encouraged. So I don't
no,
think
he said
it's
not celebrated, which I thought was a really good way of putting it.
So I don't know how much it's going to go down that route, but I mean, if they've made him a vicar, there's going to have to be some kind of clash.
They already went there with Sophie, though. That's what I get, and it was kind of not really well explored, and maybe they thought, oh, we didn't do that well.
It does make me wonder how much Sophie is going to be part of this storyline, and Emily as well, because I don't know whether this guy is from Emily's church.
Yeah, can you imagine her being like, oh, I don't like the new vicar. Why, Emily? He's not very clean shaven.
Yeah, so, well, Sean didn't like the idea when he heard, did he? He was like, he always choked saying a vicar, so he's obviously not brought up in a good Christian household.
No, I don't imagine so.
But that
they're all wildlings up north, aren't they?
I'm very happy to see that Sean's got his own storyline, because he's been on the sidelines for years. And I know everyone kind of hates Sean, don't they?
It's such a funny fall from grace, because I believe that he was the flavour of the month. He even had his own show. And then spectacularly Cotton crashed.
Yeah, I think people don't necessarily like Anthony Cotton, because I think he's a bit too much of a diva in real life, allegedly.
I've never met him, and I don't know how true the stories are, but everyone I've spoken to who has mentioned him or spoken about meeting him said that they did not have a good experience.
Mm.
That's all I'm going to say.
But I do like the character of Sean, and it's nice to see him
I think he's inherently likeable.
He's just like...
He's not in it enough to be irritating anymore. And I think at one point he was. And I think if you didn't like him, it would have been a bit too much to stomach, perhaps.
Yeah. But was it an interview with him, I think I read recently, where he said that when he first came into it, he thought that the writers were just writing Raquel and giving him the lines almost.
I never heard that.
I think that was about him. He said they didn't really know what to do with me at the start because Sarah Lancashire had just left and they were just writing the same kind of style. But I can't particularly see that. But yeah, it's
there you go.
Good that he's got a storyline. Good that he's got a fella. I've just got a feeling it's going to end up with him being sad and miserable and lonely again.
Again. Yep. So let's move on to Alia and Gary.
There was comedy training at the factory on Monday. Not from Kirk, who usually does it, but Sally training Alia how to. What was that? What's her job being? Deputy manager or something like that. There, some made up job.
Anyway, she flirts with Gary, and then he says to Alia, "Can we meet in Leanne's flat?" And she asks Leanne for some reason. And
yeah, because Leanne knows about them, doesn't she?
No, why on earth would I do that? And it is a stupid question, because why would she do that? That's number one. I would never let someone borrow my flat to get up to whatever they want.
Well, they did just say they were going to be talking.
I really don't care. and then, yeah, Leanne says no. On Wednesday, Alia's impressioning client, which puts Sally's nose out of joint, because she's kind of done research about this buyer
this is the Diane's sofa husband. Man, isn't it?
Yeah. And so Alia calls Gary to the factory for a little secret liaison in the evening, and they get disturbed by Tracy, sneak into the alley, and Gary starts saying about, why do we always have to hide our love? And she says, I can't tell my family yet.
I hope they get it over with, because this has been going on for too long.
Well, you
long
know,
now.
They are going to find out. Otherwise, it's a pointless, boring storyline. So there's going to be a massive argument.
Hmm.
Which kind of would be, that's kind of the only interesting thing that can happen in this storyline.
I wish that as a couple, I wanted them to stay together.
Yeah, me
but
too.
Honestly, I don't care. If Cal finds out and is like, no, I forbid it, I'd be like, eh, okay then. But if they had two,
boring.
Yeah, if they had two characters that were like, oh, they're perfect for each other and aren't they so sweet together, and Romeo and Juliet, their families are coming between them, it'd be quite interesting.
Yeah,
and be like,
that
oh,
would
come
actually
on.
Be good. That would be a good storyline.
As it is, it's like, well, if they stay together, good for them.
I don't
if not,
believe that they would
don't really care.
People.
No, not really.
So on Friday, we have a Muslim Father Christmas, because Sharif dresses up
He's going to dress
centre.
Up at the community
centre, isn't
he?
He's got his outfit ready, because Yasmin is getting herself very embroiled in Coronation Street's society. Isn't
oh,
she?
So much that she decides she wants to move there from
she
her
wants to buy
posh house.
Number 6.
Yeah, because it's gone up for auction, hasn't it, now that the Armstrong Windasses have moved out of it.
Yes.
So what do you think about the idea of having the Naziers on the street?
Well, I think that they would be perfect to move in. I don't believe that they would actually want to live there. It's the same as I don't believe Diane would ever want to hang around in the Rovers.
Are they still keeping their old house?
No.
Because I can imagine, like, them slumming it in Coronation Street or something. Well, Yasmin said, oh, it's just
you
so convenient because we all work there.
I know, it's stupid, isn't
everyone
it?
Else who works on Coronation Street lives there, Sharif, so I think we've got to do that.
Well, she does try to convince him, but just based on the savings in petrol. But the only drawback is the woman with the
blonde woman lives nearby. Now that's got a good comedy potential, hasn't it? Sally and Yasmin next to each other and kind of getting on each other's nerves,
because Yasmin is kind of everything Sally wants to be, almost, because she's very
successful,
well respected, she dresses well, she's obviously wealthy, she's a businesswoman, she is accomplished in other areas and cultural,
and she does a bit for charity as well, so she's got her community centre.
But Sally probably doesn't really like her, I wouldn't have imagined.
I wouldn't have thought so, no. So that could be quite funny over the fence, sniping at each other or yeah. something. But obviously the Naziers are Stuart Blackburn's new thing and he wants to get them fully integrated. And we're no big fans of Zidane, I don't think anyone is. Alia, take her or leave
her. I'm kind of warming to Zidane now because he's such a git. But he's got a personality, whereas Alia doesn't.
No.
Cal is just slowly turning to yoghurt. He's bland as hell.
Yeah, it depends where they want the focus to be. Because if having them move into Coronation Street means more Sharif and Yasmin, brilliant. But if it means more of the other three, not so bothered. But I'd be interested to see more of like the day-to-day life of the Nazir family, like over the breakfast table or whatever.
If they want Sharif to be interesting, they need to tease out a bit more conflict between him and Yasmin. They're kind of doing it a little bit, but I think they need to do it a bit more. Because at the moment, I feel like Sharif's just kind of like bemused and quite almost laughing at Yasmin in kind of a very detached way.
Let her get on with it. Let the little woman have her thing. And...
Yeah, which I kind of find patronising and a bit of a missed opportunity for a bit more of a spark.
Yeah.
I find it hilarious that it's going to be Father Christmas.
Yeah. So, I think...
You said when they called it a Pakistani Father Christmas or something like that.
I don't remember. I can't remember what they said. But, yeah, new family on the street. I mean, that house, it's like revolving doors, so I don't know how long they're going to stay.
There's no point in bringing a brand new family into the street. They might as well move in a family that's already...
Yeah, established.
Yeah.
And they're not fully bad.
They're not fully bad.
With the Windasses, when they first came in, they were horrible, weren't they? They were proper Chav family, Anna and Eddie and Gary, and I didn't like that. I was no fan of the Mortons before them, and even the Harrises were a bit bland, but at least with the Naziers, I do like Sharif and Yasmin, so they got promise, I suppose.
I just can't wait to have Sally be viewed as, like, the one that's bringing down the street, sort of thing. 'Cause, yeah, I think Yasmin would look down her nose.
I can just see them, like, both having dinner parties on the same day and trying to outdo each other or something. Or Sally
just
saying,
inviting each other, or inviting them round. And
Yeah. Come to my conservatory,
I can
Yasmin.
Just imagine, like, kind of like what happened with Norris and Emily, where they got invited round with Eid, and they were kind of reluctant, but then they kind of warmed to it. But you can just imagine Sally and Tim going around for dinner, and Sally kind of making a fuss about all the foods being weird, and Tim's I love a curry, and just
Tim would be like, and Sally might be like, she'd read up about it or something, and says like oh, is this what you call? I don't know, I can't say it because I haven't.
Is this what you call chicken tikka? I've heard of this.
Yeah, she just absolutely put her foot in it. So
no, I can just imagine her sort of putting it all down and
not liking it, or
yeah, and saying it's not dinner party food, is it, and stuff like that.
Yeah, and you're right. Tim's just gonna be like, get on with them like a house on fire and just treat them like normal people.
Well, no, he'll just like eating the food.
Yeah,
and then Sally bringing her Yasmin, inviting Yasmin around and sort of serving like
fish fingers and chips. This is our culture's traditional meal, Yasmin.
No, it'd be more like shepherd's pie, and they'd be like, oh, it's a bit bland.
So there we go. That is Street Talk for this week. And that's the show for this week. Like I said, we have got some news and feedback. We'll save them till next time. Also next time, we have got nominations for the Conversation Street Awards 2014. Awards season is nearly on us.
Oh, I'm going to have to find a new dress.
Find your new dress again. For anyone that hasn't been watching for a year, at the end of every year, we do a big awards show where we have got...
It's glitzy and glamorous.
Load of categories. And
it's
we say
live
who has
on
impressed
ITV.
Us.
It's actually shown on Friday night, primetime television. So
don't
if
get
you want
hopes
to come,
up.
Please email us and we'll get you some
no,
VIP
that's not true
seats.
At all.
Ant and Dec are going to be doing the comparing, which I strongly objected to, but apparently they're still famous.
Have you finished? It's just an awards show on our podcast at New Year, and we'll say who the nominations are next week, and then you can tell us who you think you'd like to win.
We'll say, no, we didn't pick them, we picked this. Because yeah, exactly. It's not publicly voted awards, it's our awards.
We do reader
ones, and then we do our choice.
I think last year when we had it, we like said, if me and you don't agree on something, we had like a big proportion of the votes, and then
basically
the
what we do
made up for the rest
is we have a load of nominations, and then we waffle around to talk about it, and then we say what we think, and then we say what you think, and nobody really wins.
But they get a nice little award tweeted
really,
out
yeah.
to them.
We do Photoshop.
I got the idea. So, if you'd like to get in touch with us, Maybe not so much next week because the backlog for the emails is already pretty big. But you can do it, conversationstreet@gmail.com.
Well, no, because people are going to want to write in and tell us what they think about...
What you think about the tour.
Yes.
And, yeah, no, do. We stuff. Don't want to put you off. You can also Skype us. We're at Conversation Street on Skype. You can write a comment on our blog at conversationstreet.podbean.com. Follow us on Twitter, at Conversation Stew, or on Facebook as well. And that's pretty it. Much everywhere you can get in touch with us.
You can send a pigeon if you know where we live, which you don't.
Somewhere between Manchester and the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, get a pin. Right.
That's Let's it. Go. That's Let's it. Go. Let's go.
Goodbye.
The music for this episode came from podcastthemes.com.